Hello and welcome to Entertainment Weekly. I'm volunteer reader Diane Salisbury on Sun Sounds of Arizona, and every week I read from Entertainment Weekly's website, which is EW.com. This week I have a whole mix of articles, and I'll say that for a few weeks now I've been commenting on how there just aren't any reviews the way that there used to be in the movies and TV section. And I noticed now that their TV and movies section isn't just reviews. The new headline is reviews and recommendations. So that at least acknowledges that it's not that I'm just missing them, even though I've been looking for them. They've just changed how they're coordinating or organizing their content. But there is a must list this week, and I do love to start with those. So let's get going there. The end of Stranger Things, an Everybody Loves Raymond reunion, and Elizabeth Olsen in a love triangle top this week's must list. Elsie Wendt's play Initiative and Goldfrapp's deluxe version of Supernature round out our picks for the weekend. This is by the Entertainment Weekly staff. Given that it's Black Friday, I figure why not lean into the consumerism of it all and give a shout out to some of the commercials that have delighted me recently? You may recall I previously celebrated Zoe Saldana in a T-Mobile ad this summer. Her joyous squeal still plays in my head at least once a day. But more recently, I've found joy in Cynthia Erivo and Jonathan Bailey being oh so charming in a Dunkin' spot. And just this week, there was a hot, frosty reunion with Lacey Chabert and Dustin Milligan in Maybe This Christmas, a 5-episode micro-drama created by Ryan Reynolds' entertainment company Maximum Effort for Maybelline. Memorable ads, not just for Super Bowl season anymore. That was Patrick Gomez, editor-in-chief. First on our list, Stranger Things. The beginning of the end of Stranger Things is here, and there's a lot to catch up on in Hawkins since we last saw the crew on our screens. Season 5 is set in the fall of 1987, more than a year after the events of Season 4, and features a Terminator-like Vecna gearing up to face off against Eleven, played by Millie Bobby Brown. But first, we'll learn more about the connection between Will, played by Noah Schnapp, and the Upside Down. You don't want to miss the epic conclusion of one of Netflix's biggest shows, which the streamer is dropping in 3 parts. Everybody Loves Raymond, 30th Anniversary Reunion. Celebrate Thanksgiving with one of TV's funniest and most beloved families, minus Marie Barone's Tofu Turkey. Hosted by star Ray Romano and series creator Phil Rosenthal, the special, streaming on Paramount Plus, looks back at 9 seasons of the hit CBS comedy with Brad Garrett, Patricia Heaton, and other cast members. Eternity, a rom-com set in the afterlife, isn't a novel concept, see Defending Your Life, but this story breathes new spirit into the genre. Elizabeth Olsen stars as Joan, a dead woman who faces a dilemma. Spend forever with Miles Teller or Callum Turner? Goldfrapp's Supernature. The British duo's double LP reissue of their 2005 glam pop manifesto dials up the decadence, pairing the original album, which includes disco stompers like Ooh La La and Ride a White Horse, with a bonus 12-inch of new remixes, all pressed on peacock-colored vinyl. And our last item, Initiative. Elsie Wendt's ambitious high school drama makes a big ask. 5 hours of your time to watch 7 teenagers grow up in a sleepy coastal California small town. Witty, evocative, and ever-prescient, the emotional saga at New York City's Public Theater is well worth every second. That's our bust list for this week, The End of Stranger Things, and Everybody Loves Raymond Reunion, and Elizabeth Olsen in a love triangle top this week's must list, and it was by the Entertainment Weekly staff. I have a couple sidebar articles from that. The first one is 6 past Stranger Things episodes that influenced season 5, according to the Duffers. Series creators Matt and Ross Duffer reveal 6 episodes they revisited when mapping out the final season. This is by Nick Romano. A big part of Stranger Things season 5 was tying up loose ends. Why was Noah Schnapp's Will Byers taken to the Upside Down all the way back in season 1? What even is the Upside Down? These were two of the biggest questions series creators Matt and Ross Duffer hoped to answer by presenting their legions of fans around the world with a proper conclusion to the story that began in 2016. To do that, the brotherly duo revisited specific episodes from past seasons. Season 2 in particular influenced Season 5 in a big way, Matt tells Entertainment Weekly. But also, we talked a lot about Season 1. That's where it all began. So a lot about Season 5 is bringing everything full circle as much as we can. If you're looking to refresh your memory of past events in the lead-up to Stranger Things 5, but perhaps don't necessarily want to re-binge-watch the first 4 seasons, here are the key episodes the Duffers referenced in crafting this finale story. The bathtub is the first episode mentioned. It's from Season 1, Episode 7. You might remember this episode, which takes place well after the disappearance of Will, as the one when Eleven, played by Millie Bobby Brown, telekinetically flips a car through the air as the gang continues to dodge Dr. Martin Brenner, played by Matthew Modine, and his goons from Hawkins' lab. More importantly, this is the moment when Eleven figures out a way to telepathically search for Will. Inspired by the bathtub in the Byers household, she tasks her friends with building her own sensory deprivation tank, which they set up in the gym at Hawkins Middle School. Upon entering the psychic void, she finds the remains of Barb, played by Shannon Purser, as well as Will hiding inside the warped, upside-down version of Castle Byers. The next episode is The Upside Down, Season 1, Episode 8. A lot goes down in the season finale. That's for Season 1. Nancy, played by Natalia Dyer, and Jonathan, played by Charlie Heaton, try to trap a Demogorgon that invades the Byers house, which is reminiscent of a sequence coming in Season 5. It's also the episode where Joyce, played by Winona Ryder, and Hopper, played by David Harbour, enter the Upside Down and find Will unresponsive with a tentacle down his throat. As the Duffers point out, they revisit these Season 1 moments over the course of the final season. It's no spoiler to say that Netflix already revealed the opening 5 minutes, which goes back to explore more of what happened to Will in Season 1. The clip reveals Vecna, played by Jamie Campbell-Bauer, put that tentacle down his throat to pump something into the boy. We've always wanted to explain what Will was doing in that basement, why he is alive, why this vine is attached to his throat. These are all loose ends that we've never been able to explain, Ross comments. The next episode is Will the Wise. That's from Season 2, Episode 4. Season 2 really begins Will's journey to grapple with the lasting effects of his exposure to the Upside Down. Will the Wise is one Matt points to. It's when Will's episodes, in which he has visions of the Mind Flayer pouring its shadow tentacles inside of him, become more frequent and intense. Will opens up to Joyce about what he's experiencing, leading to a scene in which his mom draws a warm bath, only for Will to recoil. He likes it cold, Will says, he being the Mind Flayer. Elsewhere, Nancy and Jonathan visit the remains of Hawkins' lab, which at this point still has a gaping portal open to the Upside Down that can't seem to close. It's also the episode where Eleven has a vision of her mother, Terry Ives, played by Amy Mullins, and Hopper discovers a vast network of underground tunnels thanks to Will's drawings. Dig Dug. That's season 2, episode 5. An important piece of lore. Will reveals to the others that he can see everything that the Mind Flayer does. He begins spying on the shadow creature's movements, though his friends fear the Mind Flayer using this connection against them. Will uses his newfound ability to track Hopper's movements in the underground tunnels. Another notable development is that Eleven finds her mother, who's in a catatonic state. She communicates with Terry through the void and learns how Brenner stole Elle as a baby. When Terry learned the truth, she tracked her daughter down to Brenner's lab but was forcibly subjected to electroshock therapy that resulted in her current condition. And we have The Spy. That's from season 2 also, and that's episode 6. A scene from October's Stranger Things 5 trailer shows Vecna, now physically more imposing, meeting Will face-to-face in the new season. You are going to help me one last time, he says. The key to that line, Ross notes, is to actually not look back at season 1, but to look back at season 2, specifically The Spy being the most important episode when Will was really working, in a way, for the Mind Flayer. Ross is referring to the moment when Will claims to have obtained knowledge of how to defeat the Mind Flayer. So he shows Dr. Sam Owens, played by Paul Reiser, and his team a location in the underground tunnels he wasn't supposed to see. It's revealed later in that the Mind Flayer did use his metal link against the kids by forcing Will to lure the soldiers into a Demogorgon trap. Oh, I made that sound like that was the last episode, but this is the one. This is the last one. The Massacre at Hawkins Lab, Season 4, Episode 7. A lot of Season 5 was about Henry and his backstory, so Massacre at Hawkins Lab, which is Episode 7 from Season 4, Matt says, listing off another episode. This one is uniquely revealing in that the almost 2-hour-long chapter digs into Eleven's memories of being in Hawkins Lab as a child. It's the point when viewers learn that Brenner's mysterious orderly is really One, a.k.a. Henry Creel, a.k.a. Vecna, as we learn by season's end. Not realizing his identity, Eleven telekinetically removes the implanted chip that kept One docile, allowing him to, as the episode's title suggests, massacre nearly everyone at the facility. In a confrontation, Elle's powers inadvertently open the first door to the Upside Down, trapping One inside. Another reason this episode became influential? The teens are in the Upside Down, and they find that it's frozen in time, Ross explains. That all plays into season 5 as we get more and more into the Upside Down. Stranger Things released the first 4 episodes as Volume 1 on Netflix Wednesday at 8 p.m., and episodes 5 through 7 are going to arrive as Volume 2 on Christmas Day at the same time. The series finale, running at around 2 hours, will then drop simultaneously in select movie theaters and on the streaming platform New Year's Eve at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and 5 p.m. Pacific Time. That was 6 past Stranger Things episodes that influenced Season 5, according to the Duffers. And it was by Nick Romano. Another Stranger Things article, the Duffer Brothers cast their high school drama teacher in Stranger Things Season 5. Hope saw something in us. Hope Hines-Love plays a pivotal role as elementary school teacher Miss Harris. This is by Sydney Buxbaum. The Dover brothers made sure their art imitated their lives in the fifth and final season of Stranger Things. Series co-creator Ross Duffer revealed Friday that he and brother Matt Duffer cast their high school drama teacher, Hope Hines Love, in a pivotal season 5 role as Hawkins Elementary School teacher, Miss Harris. "High school was rough for me and my brother," Russ wrote in a heartfelt Instagram post, "but Hope saw something in us we didn't see in ourselves, and she helped give us the confidence to not only survive those 4 years, but to move to LA and chase our dreams." He added, "Shout out to all the teachers out there making a difference, and please, let's prioritize the arts in schools." Introduced in season 5, volume 1 of the hit sci-fi drama, Miss Harris, a school teacher who previously instructed each of the Hawkins teens fighting the evil Vecna, played by Jamie Campbell-Bauer. Miss Harris is a school teacher who previously instructed each of the Hawkins teens fighting the evil Vecna, played by Jamie Campbell-Bauer. And there's a warning here that spoilers for season 5 are ahead, but I will say this article is super short, so I'm sure that these spoilers are just based around this one topic. I'm sure that there are other things that will still surprise us. Her current classroom is being targeted by Vecna in disguise as a kindly imaginary friend for plans that have yet to be revealed. He has appeared to multiple children pretending to be their protector from monsters and schemes to kidnap them all after starting with Holly Wheeler, played by Nell Fisher. When Will, played by Noah Schnapp, discovers Vecna's nefarious plans, he and his friends attempt to safely ferry all the targeted kids out of Hawkins. That mission is complicated by the army quarantining the entire class, including Miss Harris, on a base in the center of Hawkins, resulting in an epic showdown between Will and Vecna that ends on a cliffhanger. The first 4 episodes of Stranger Things Season 5 are now streaming on Netflix. Volume 2, as we know, will release on Christmas Day, and the series finale will drop on New Year's Eve. That's the Duffer brothers cast their high school drama teacher in Stranger Things Season 5, Hope Saw Something in Us, and it was by Sydney Buxbaum. Wicked for Good is out now, and here's an article about how the director tested the film without its songs, and here's why. Filmmaker John M. Chu screened a version of his new movie without its beloved music. It's by Patrick Gomez. It's hard to imagine Wicked for Good without, well, For Good. That's the song, For Good. So why did director John M. Chu ask his team to edit a version of the film without its songs? "We wanted to make sure every song fit and were right for the length, especially of the new ones," the filmmaker tells Entertainment Weekly, referencing the addition of No Place Like Home and Girl in the Bubble as new ballads composer Stephen Schwartz crafted for Cynthia Erivo's Elphaba and Ariana Grande's Glinda, respectively. "So, yeah, we did versions where we took the songs out just to double-check, to make sure. Can this story work without the song?" Chu said. "And we realized, no, you actually need it for this movie." Thank goodness. Chu admits he, at times, is not a lyric person. "I can't actually keep up with the lyrics sometimes, and I need cinema to help me understand," he explains. "The lyrics are so deep and so good that sometimes I just need a little bit of visual help to get us there." The director points to No Good Deed as one of those moments. He feels that the song, which comes after Fiero, played by Jonathan Bailey, has been captured and beaten, and Elphaba reckons with how her actions impact those around her, could come across as a one-note declaration, so he was eager to give the character a true examination of her past. "When you go back and see Shiz again, it brings you back to her whole journey," he says, of the flashback moments during the scene. "When you see Marissa Bode that way again, oh my God, Nessa Rose was so innocent. And there was this moment where Fiero looked back and Elphaba looking at him, and then that creates this, did I miss my opportunity? How did this all go to S? Millions of fans are likely grateful they're not asking the same after watching a Wicked for Good without its songs. That was Wicked for Good director tested the film without its songs, and here's why. It was by Patrick Gomez. And as I'm recording this, Thanksgiving has just happened a couple days ago, so here are the 10 worst Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade mishaps, from Barney's murder to Sonic's disastrous debut. Balloons don't always play by our rules. This is by Randall Colburn. The Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade unites generations, encouraging revelers to count their blessings as floating odes to commerce and media fill the wintry sky. Since its start in 1924, the parade has persevered for more than a century, incorporating sky-high balloons, decked-out floats, and celebrity performances, as well as highlights from New York City's vibrant theatrical scene. Of course, controversy is inevitable for such an extravagant, long-running spectacle. To flaunt inflatable behemoths around New York City is to court catastrophe, and the annual parade has seen its fair share, some funny, some tragic. Here we've assembled 10 of the most memorable Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade mishaps, from a flaming Felix the Cat and the quote-unquote murder of Barney to 1997's terrible, horrible, no good, very bad parade. So our number one on this list is 1931, Felix on Fire. Black cats can be portents of bad luck. It's fitting, then, that the parade's first major catastrophe saw Felix the Cat catch fire when a balloon modeled after the animated feline hit a power line. "Toy cat expires in blaze," reads the New York Times' incredible headline about the incident. Next we have 1932, Tomcat takes to the sky. In the parade's early days, the balloons weren't deflated once their march down 6th Avenue was completed. Rather, they were simply released into the sky, left to soar for around a week before touching down on some poor soul's house. But hey, anyone who returned a downed balloon to Macy's scored a cool $100 from the department store chain. The downside of that practice emerged in 1932 when a 22-year-old pilot steering a biplane over Queens came face to face with something yellow, striped, and tremendous like a sea serpent out of its native element, per the New York Times. No, it wasn't a dragon or an alien. It was Tomcat, a 60-foot balloon that had just been cut loose from Herald Square. The plane's left wing clipped the balloon, which wrapped around the wing and sent the vessel into a tailspin. Thankfully, Tom's grip on the plane eventually loosened and the plane was able to avoid crashing. It was a close call, though, with the Times reporting that the plane was just 80 feet above ground before the save. Wow. 1971, a mighty wind. The Macy's Parade is, by and large, a rain or shine situation, sometimes to the peril of those performing, but the storms sweeping New York City on Thanksgiving Day in 1971 were simply too severe. As harsh winds whipped outside, organizers chose to ground the balloons for the first time since the helium shortage during World War II. That's not to say there was no entertainment for those who weathered the rain to celebrate the holiday. Junior Miss America did come, the New York Times reported, but she stayed in her pumpkin coach and shivered. 1983, Mickey Mouse is dead. Mickey Mouse didn't even get to float over the 1983 Macy's Parade. Why? Well, he literally exploded while being inflated, putting an end to that particular Mickey. Mickey Mouse is dead, Macy's employee Ken Medock, who had overseen the Mickey balloon for 15 years, told the New York Times. When workers unpacked him, they tore his arm off, and when they went to inflate him, he blew up. Medock added, "I'm sort of depressed. I think the children will miss him." 1986 was a raggedy affair. In 1986, it was a rough year, what with the Challenger explosion and the Chernobyl disaster casting a dark shadow over the previous months. Comfort was in short supply at that year's Thanksgiving Day parade, which proved to be among the most mishap-laden outings in its history. Heavy winds had their way with the balloons, leading to Woody Woodpecker's partial decapitation, Garfield limping on just two legs, and Superman losing a hand in the trees along 77th Street. By the parade's end, Olive Oil retained just two grotesque fragments of her left arm, according to the New York Times. But it was Raggedy Ann who wreaked the most havoc, knocking into a street lamp that shattered and fell into the cement. Thankfully, nobody was injured. 1993 was Sonic's disastrous debut. Nowadays, it's common to see video game characters at the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade, but that wasn't the case in 1993. Sonic the Hedgehog, Sega's answer to Nintendo's beloved Mario, was among the new balloons that year, marking the first time a gaming icon would join the parade. Unfortunately, his chaotic debut did little to win over non-gamers. It was a windy day, and Sonic smashed into a street lamp at 58th and Broadway, sending glass and metal raining down on the crowd as the balloon deflated due to a puncture. An off-duty police officer and a little girl were both injured, and the officer was hospitalized. According to a local news report at the time, the girl was treated at the scene. The incident made national headlines, and the 1994 Friends episode, the one where Underdog gets away, was reportedly inspired by it. In a Polygon org history of the calamity, a former marketing executive who worked on the Sonic campaign said that the balloon's design may have contributed to the mishap. Before the design of Sonic, the parade balloons all floated down the parade route parallel to the street. Sonic was captured in mid-flight, upward, she explained. That meant the ground crew had longer ropes in the front than in the back, and consequently, less control over the balloon. 1995 is Dudley is a dud. Dudley the Dragon, a sneaker-clad green lizard popular on Canadian TV in the mid-90s, made his Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade debut in 1995. Sadly, he spewed more air than fire after slamming into a Columbus Circle streetlight. Not only did the impact slice open his yellow belly, but it sent shattered glass onto parade attendees. Reports at the time highlighted the poor dragon's slow deflation and inability to finish the 25 blocks left on his journey. Alas, poor Dudley. 1997, the cat in the splat. Perhaps the most disastrous Macy's Thanksgiving Day parade occurred in 1997, when an accident involving a cat in the hat balloon resulted in multiple injuries, a $395 million lawsuit, and a mayoral task that led to sweeping reforms in terms of balloon size, volunteer training, and even streetlight design. It does seem like streetlights have been a big problem, a consistent problem in all of these. The most severe of the parade's many catastrophes saw the Cat in the Hat balloon strike a streetlight at 72nd Street and Central Park West, causing a horizontal metal arm to snap off and fall onto the crowd below. 4 spectators were injured, 2 with severe head injuries. One woman, Kathleen Corona, suffered a skull fracture and was in a coma for nearly a month. She went on to sue the city, Macy's, and the lamppost manufacturer for $395 million per CNN. A settlement was reached in 2001. Several other balloons struggled to stay afloat during the 1997 parade, which was derailed by windy conditions. Both the Pink Panther and Barney balloons needed to be punctured with knives to prevent them from imploding, according to the New York Times. Amusingly, footage of Barney's collapse and quote-unquote murder has become a meme over the last few decades. Number 9 of 10 is from 2005. Red and yellow ruin the holidays. An M&M's-sponsored spectacle called Red and Yellow Brighten the Holidays did anything but during the 2005 incident that saw the balloon, designed to resemble an air balloon, careen into a street lamp in Times Square. As we can see in video footage that's linked in the article, the 515-pound balloon knocked a light fixture off the tall pole, dropping it onto spectators below. As reported by the New York Times, 2 spectators were injured. The first, a 26-year-old woman in a wheelchair, suffered a bruised forehead, while her 11-year-old sister suffered a chipped tooth and cut to the back of her head, necessitating 6 stitches. And our last item is from 2017, so it's been pretty safe since then. 2017, Spider-Man meets Uncle Sam. This one's less a mishap than a blush-worthy bit of fun. Also, it happened the night before the parade, but we can't imagine Macy's was thrilled when a shot of Spider-Man's masked face nestled in the rear end of an Uncle Sam balloon, and that it made the rounds on social media. That is the 10 worst Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade mishaps, from Barney's murder to Sonic's disastrous debut. And it was by Randall Colburn. This is a good breaking point. I'm going to take a quick moment here to say that you're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona. This is Entertainment Weekly, and I'm reading from their website. It's EW.com. I have a trio of stories where celebrities are sharing health messages. The first is Dolly Parton sharing holiday video. It's a message amid health issues. So thankful for all of you. Parton recently missed a Hall of Fame induction ceremony for her Dollywood theme park at an industry convention. This is by Joey Nolfi. Dolly Parton is feeling a cornucopia of emotions this Thanksgiving as the iconic performer shared a sweet holiday greeting with fans amid her ongoing health issues. After her health led her to miss a recent International Association of Amusement Parks and Attractions Hall of Fame induction ceremony on behalf of her Dollywood theme park, Parton, 79, offered a joyful greeting to her supporters in a video shared on social media on Thanksgiving Day. And there's a link to the video in this article. Well, hey, it's Dolly here, and I want to wish you and your family blessings this Thanksgiving, Parton said in the video, in which she appeared in a taupe cardigan against a brown backdrop. She finished the clip by wishing a happy Thanksgiving to everyone and added one more message before signing off. And just know that I will always love you, Parton concluded, referencing the lyrics to one of her signature songs, 1974's I Will Always Love You. On November 19th, Parton shared an update on her health after she postponed a series of Las Vegas concerts due to medical issues. I sure wish I could be with you in person today, but you probably heard that I've been dealing with a few health challenges this fall, and my doctors told me to take it easy for just a little while, and I'm truly sorry I can't be there. I sure wanted to take the chance to say thank you for this incredible honor, Parton said in an Instagram video explaining her absence from IAAPA. Parton's absence from the annual convention came after a prior announcement indicating Parton would not accept her honorary Oscar in person at the Academy's Governor's Awards earlier this month, with Parton instead opting to accept her Jean Hershel Humanitarian Award remotely from Tennessee. Parton's sister, Frida, also made headlines in recent weeks when she called for prayers to help lift up her sibling amid her health issues. After speculation mounted that Parton was in dire condition, Frida clarified online that she didn't mean to scare anyone or make it sound so serious when asking for prayers for Dolly, and that her sister was just a little under the weather. The Jolene and 9-to-5 performer then updated her fans on her condition in a video shared to Instagram, that's also linked here, telling them, "I wanted you to know that I'm not dying. I'm not ready to die yet. I don't think God is through with me, and I ain't done working. So I love you for caring and keep praying for me." Parton also recently lost her husband of over 60 years, Carl Dean, and later missed a Dollywood press conference in September after coming down with a kidney stone that caused a little problem, she told attendees in a recorded message that played during the event celebrating the park's 40th season and announcing its upcoming $50 million night flight roller coaster and water ride hybrid. We can watch Parton's Thanksgiving message in the video that's linked in this article. So many videos are linked here. Dolly Parton shares Hollywood video message amid health issues, and that was by Joey Nolfi. Next, we have Celine Dion sharing sobering address to fans amid her stiff person syndrome. Take a deep breath. Dion was diagnosed with the condition in 2022. This is by Joey Nolfi. Pop icon Celine Dion has shared a sobering message with her fans this holiday season. Amid her life with stiff person syndrome, which she was first diagnosed with in 2022 amid the cancellation of her world tour, the 57-year-old Canadian singer shared a video address on Thursday urging her supporters to take stock of their good fortune this Thanksgiving. "Dear friends, today is a beautiful reminder to slow down. Take a deep breath and give thanks," Dion said in the emotional clip in which she posted to Instagram, which is linked here. "There is something so powerful about gathering with the people you love, whether around the full table, over the phone, or even just in your heart," she added in the video, which was shared nearly 10 years after she lost her husband to throat cancer in 2016. In the clip, which she filmed while seated on a cream-colored sofa, Dion also expressed gratitude for the people in her life. "I'm so thankful to my family and our moments together that mean the world to me," she said. "May your Thanksgiving be filled with joy, with peace, and with gratitude for everything, even the little things." Dion finished the video with a holiday tiding for fans. "Happy Thanksgiving from me and my family to you and yours," the entertainer concluded. Dion was first diagnosed with stiff person syndrome in 2022, which is described as a neurological condition that causes severe muscle stiffness in the back, legs, and sometimes other parts of the body, per the Mayo Clinic. The Power of Love and My Heart Will Go On performer was forced to cancel her Courage World Tour following the diagnosis, which previously resulted in postponing several concert dates over her health. "I'm so sorry to disappoint all of you once again. I'm working really hard to build back my strength, but touring can be difficult even when you're 100%. It's not fair to you to keep postponing the shows, and even though it breaks my heart, it's best that we cancel everything now until I'm really ready to be back on stage again," Dion wrote in a statement at the time. "I want you all to know I'm not giving up, and I can't wait to see you again." Dion's sister, Claudette, later told Canadian outlet 7 Jours that her sister doesn't have control over her muscles at times. "There are some who have lost hope because it's a disease that's not very well known," she added. "What pains me is that she has always been disciplined. She's always worked hard. Our mother always told her, 'You're going to do it well. You're going to do it properly.'" The singer eventually made a highly publicized onstage comeback at the 2024 Grammys, where she appeared at the end of the ceremony to present the Album of the Year award. "Thank you all," Dionne said during the surprise moment. "I love you right back. When I say that I'm happy to be here, it's really meant from my heart. Those who have been blessed enough to be here at the Grammy Awards must never take for granted the tremendous love and joy that music brings to our lives and to the people around the world." We can watch Dionne's video message in the link that's in the article. That was Celine Dion shares sobering address to fans amid stiff person syndrome. Take a deep breath. And it was by Joey Nolfi. And then our third celebrity is Judi Dench. She reveals she can't recognize anybody anymore due to worsening eye condition. The Oscar-winning actress has stepped back from performing since revealing her macular degeneration diagnosis in 2012. This is by Mikishana Pierre. Dame Judi Dench is opening up about her worsening eyesight as she lives with age-related macular degeneration. During a recent appearance on ITV with longtime friend and fellow actor Ian McKellen, Dench said she can't see anymore and can no longer watch television or read. "You don't see me on camera anymore because I can't see," she explained. "I've got, you know, that thing." When McKellen, who starred in Macbeth with Dench some 50 years ago, joked that they could see her, the Oscar-winning actress conceded the point, adding, "Yes, and I can see your outline and I know you so well, but I can't recognize anybody anymore." Dench, 90, went on to admit that she can't see the TV and can't see to read. McKellen then jokingly asked Dench if she goes up to total strangers and say, "Lovely to see you again," to which she laughed and responded, "Sometimes." Dench disclosed her diagnosis in 2012, telling the Daily Mirror, "I can't read scripts anymore. Somebody comes and reads them to me, like telling me a story. It's usually my daughter or my agent or a friend, and actually, I like that because I sit there and imagine the story in my mind." She added, "I've got what my ma had, macular degeneration, which you get when you get old." According to the Cleveland Clinic, macular degeneration affects central vision. This means that people with macular degeneration can't see things directly in front of them, the clinic explains, adding that the disease is age-related and most commonly found in people over 50. Dench previously spoke about how she's dealt with the condition in support of the Vision Foundation, a sight loss charity. "You find a way of just getting about and getting over the things that you find very difficult," she said. "I've had to find another way of learning lines and things, which is having great friends of mine repeat them to me over and over and over again. So I have to learn through repetition, and I just hope that people won't notice too much if all the lines are completely hopeless." She recalled one instance while starring in a West End production of The Winter's Tale alongside Kenneth Branagh in 2015. He told her, "Judy, if you were to say that speech about 8 feet to your right, you'd be saying it to me and not to the proscenium." She added, "I rely on people to tell me." Despite needing assistance for most aspects of her life, Dench has been vocal about persevering as she navigates her reduced workload since her diagnosis. During an appearance on The Graham Norton Show in 2023, she said she used to memorize lines via her photographic memory. "I need to find a machine that not only teaches me my lines, but also tells me where they appear on the stage," the Philomena star said. "I used to find it very easy to learn lines and remember them. I could do the whole of Twelfth Night right now." That was Judi Dench reveals she can't recognize anybody anymore due to worsening eye condition, and it was by Mikishana Pierre. Here's an article about why Future Office star was fired from Back to the Future after Michael J. Fox replaced Eric Stoltz. Fox details the domino effect that his replacing Stoltz weeks into production had on the 80s classic in his new memoir, Future Boy. This is by Ryan Coleman. Hollywood can be brutal. Sometimes you lose a promising part in an upcoming film because you're deemed the wrong fit, but you can even lose your part because your scene partner is deemed the wrong fit. Melora Hardin, the future star of The Office, found herself on the wrong end of such a casting decision after she'd already shot weeks of footage for the 1985 sci-fi comedy classic Back to the Future. Franchise star Michael J. Fox recounted the series of dominoes that fell, eventually toppling Hardin's chance at her first big break in his new memoir of the making of the film, Future Boy. "My goal as a child was self-preservation. Bullies often ridiculed my height, an easy target. I suffered the indignity of short jokes and prejudice against my smallness," he wrote. Fox found that his diminutive stature worked in my favor when I was a teenage actor playing a younger kid, but it turned against me as an adult when I went up for romantic leads opposite taller actresses. That sword proved to be double-edged, however, when Fox replaced Eric Stoltz as the lead in Robert Zemeckis and Steven Spielberg's time-traveling romp 6 weeks into production. Suddenly it wasn't Fox who was too short, but Hardin, cast to play protagonist Marty McFly's girlfriend Jennifer Parker, who was too tall. "I regret that this prejudice inadvertently affected another cast member in Back to the Future, Melora Hardin, the talented actress who had played Marty's girlfriend Jennifer opposite the perfectly tall Eric Stoltz," Fox explained. "Melora, several inches taller than me, was replaced in the movie after I took over as Marty. Initially, Bob Zemeckis thought perhaps the audience could look past our height difference, but when he quickly surveyed the female members of the crew, they assured him that the tall, pretty girl in high school rarely picks the cute short guy. Though he'd won one of the most coveted roles of the year among younger leading men, Fox, primarily known as the conservative wise guy Alex P. Keaton on the NBC sitcom Family Ties, wasn't yet regarded as a true star. No one asked for my opinion, but I would have risen to Melora's defense," he lamented. That was why future Office star was fired from Back to the Future after Michael J. Fox replaced Eric Stoltz. And it was by Ryan Coleman. There have been some good post-Thanksgiving articles this episode, and here's another one that I found. Seth Meyers sits down with his three kids for adorable and chaotic late-night interview. No, no, no! In the words of Stefan, this interview had everything. Impromptu dance parties, crawling on desks, and pretend fights. This is by Emlyn Travis. Seth Meyers continued his long-standing tradition of having his family on Late Night's Thanksgiving episode by sitting down for a very adorable interview with his three children. Thursday's episode saw the 51-year-old host welcome multiple members of his family to the show, including his mom Hillary, dad Larry, and brother Josh. However, the cutest moment by far was when his and wife Alexi Ash's three children, Ash, 9, Axel, 7, and Adelaide, 4, stopped by for a quick and chaotic chat. "Last week, my kids came in to shoot their Christmas card photo. We shoot this little video where they dress up as turkeys every year, and it's always special," the Emmy winner explained prior to the interview. "But this year, I did not warn my kids at all, and last minute, on their way out, we brought them down and we put mics on them and had them come out in front of our audience, and I interviewed them. And we're showing it for the first time now." After bringing them out, Seth asked his children all about their Christmas card photo shoot. "Ash, what did you guys dress up like this year?" "It's always a themed photo," he noted, prompting his son to respond, "We were characters from the movie Elf." Everything quickly spun off the rails, however, when Adelaide declared, "And I was an alphabet." You were Alphabet? Seth questioned before Ash and Axel quickly clarified that their little sister wasn't dressed as the Alphabet. She was like my girlfriend, Axel said, seemingly referencing to Buddy the Elf's girlfriend Josie, played by Zooey Deschanel in the 2003 film. Remember in the movie? Adelaide interjected, and Agnes was a tomato. Oh, okay, gotcha. Your cousin Agnes was a tomato, Seth responded. That's great. The host went on to ask his children how they arrived at 30 Rock that day, with Axel and Ash confirming that they took a car. Adelaide, on the other hand, arrived later and explained she took the subway. When asked if she liked it, she said, yeah, the subway smelled like diarrhea. A laughing Seth replied, that's really good. The dad of three went on to ask Ash and Axel about a fight that occurred between them while they were watching last week's Pittsburgh Steelers game. There was one moment that was a happy moment for me that became sort of a sad moment, which is the Steelers intercepted the ball and I was watching. They ran it all the way back for a touchdown, and then it turned back and both of you were crying, Seth said. So Ash, why don't you tell me what happened first? Ash explained that Axel had hit him in the face with his Steelers rally towel, so then I punched him here, putting his fist to his cheek. And then I, Axel began, jumping out of his seat before pretending to land blows on a laughing Ash. Seth, a true parent, quickly shouted, no, no, no! Then he turned the interview toward Adelaide, asking which of her brothers was the sweetest, Ash, and the roughest, Axel. But Addie, do you love your brothers? Seth asked. I love this one, she said, hugging Ash. Tapping Axel, she added, but not that one. Axel, in response, mimed crying in his seat. Axel, do you want to dance just for a second? Seth asked. You feel like you want to dance for a second? Axel did indeed want to dance, rocketing out of his seat and sending his siblings and dad into a fit of laughter with his cool moves. Seth added, sometimes you can just tell when Axel wants to dance, can't you? After one more dance break, Seth wrapped their interview by thanking his children for stopping by the show. It was great to see you. Anything else you want to say, Ash? He asked. Is my time over? Axel interjected. Seth replied, yes, it's running out. Adelaide then surprised her dad by shouting, no, 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 directly into the microphone, which naturally led her siblings to begin chanting along with her. They proceeded to collapse on the ground. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been the Myers children, Seth said as Adelaide began to crawl across his desk. Thank you so much. We'll be right back with more Late Night. In a subsequent Instagram post, Seth cleared the air surrounding a few of Adelaide's comments on the show, sharing an image of Agnes dressed as a red elf with a green collar, visually similar to the calyx on a tomato. And in regards to Adelaide dressing up as Alphabet, Seth included a photo of his daughter meeting Cynthia Erivo, who plays Elphaba in the Wicked films. Lest anyone think Addie was talking nonsense, some of her most confusing answers made a ton of sense, he captioned his post. Special shout out to @CynthiaErivo for taking the time to talk to her right before her interview. We can watch Seth interview his kids in the clip that's linked in the article. That was Seth Meyers sits down with his three kids for adorable and chaotic late night interview, and it was by Emlyn Travis. I think we have time for just this quick article. It's Bruce Willis's wife, Emma, weighs in on the annual Die Hard debate. It's a Christmas movie. The 1988 action classic is unsurprisingly a favorite for the Willis family. This is by Mikishana Pierre. Bruce Willis's wife, Emma Heming Willis, is sharing how their family rings in the holidays, and one of their staples reveals her answer to the age-old debate over whether Die Hard is a Christmas movie. I think it's important to put Die Hard on because it's a Christmas movie, the model and entrepreneur quipped to people in a recent interview. The 1988 action classic starring her husband as reluctant hero John McClane is essential Yuletide viewing for the Willis clan, regardless of any arguments over the film's suitability for the season. While the actor himself has downplayed the film's status as a Christmas movie, Bruce famously declared that Die Hard is a goddamn Bruce Willis movie at his Comedy Central roast. Emma said he won't have complaints about her choice of entertainment. Bruce loved Christmas, and we love celebrating it with him, she told People. Even as the family navigates Bruce's living with frontal temporal dementia, Emma said, there's still joy. It just looks different. You have to learn and adapt and make new memories. Bring in the same traditions that you had before, she added. Life goes on. It just goes on. Dementia is hard, but there is still joy in it. I think it's important that we don't paint such a negative picture around dementia. Emma and Bruce, who starred in the films Red 2 and Perfect Stranger together, tied the knot in 2009 and shared daughters Mabel and Evelyn. Willis is also dad to daughters Tallulah, Scout, and Rumor with ex-wife Demi Moore. The actor's family has been transparent about the highs and lows of his health since his aphasia diagnosis in 2022, which progressed to frontal temporal dementia in 2023. Emma, in particular, has spread awareness about FTD on social media and in interviews. She published a book in September, The Unexpected Journey, Finding Strength, Hope, and Yourself on the Caregiving Path, intended to serve as a supportive guide for caregivers navigating a loved one's dementia diagnosis. During the ABC special, Emma and Bruce Willis, The Unexpected Journey, which aired over the summer, Emma shared that although Bruce's brain is failing him, there are still moments when she sees glimmers of his joyous personality shine through. Not days, but we get moments, she said. It's his laugh, right? Like he has such a hearty laugh. And, you know, sometimes you see that twinkle in his eye or that smirk and, you know, I just get, like, transported. She appeared visibly emotional as she continued, and it's just hard to see because as quickly as those moments appear, then it goes. It's hard, but I'm grateful. I'm grateful that my husband is still very much here. That's Bruce Willis's wife, Emma, weighs in on the annual Die Hard debate. It's a Christmas movie. That was by Mikishana Pierre. And I think we've done it again. We've ended up using all of our time for Entertainment Weekly. I've been reading from Entertainment Weekly's website, which is EW.com, here on Some Sounds of Arizona. I'm volunteer reader Diane Salisbury, and please come back next week. I'll have more articles from Entertainment Weekly. Until then, thanks for listening. Goodbye.